So the title of this talk is Instabilities of Defensively Rotating Neutron Stars. Okay. So the reason why I'm interested in the defensive rotation is because generally nearby neutron stars are defensively rotating, and if these neutron stars are rotating fast enough, and they may develop various kinds of instabilities which may give rise to strong gravitational radiation. So the rotational instability arises from non-necessary symmetric perturbations of the form e power im phi, where here phi is the azimuthal angle. And there are two types of instabilities, the dynamical and circular instabilities. Dynamical instabilities are driven by hydrodynamics and gravity, and they develop in a dynamical time scale, which is the time scale for sine wave to travel across the star. And an example of the dynamical instability is the dynamical bar instability, which corresponds to m equal to 2 non-necessary symmetric perturbations. On the other hand, the circular instabilities are driven by some dissipative processes, such as viscosity or gravitational radiation reaction, and they develop in a circular time scale, which is determined by the corresponding dissipative process, and is generally longer than the dynamical time scale. Examples of these type of instabilities are the ALMOS or the gravitational wave driven bar instability. So I will talk about the instability for the defensively rotating neutron star. But here I will consider the neutron stars are formed from the accretion-induced collapse of rigidly rotating white dwarfs. And to construct the models, we first build models of the pre-collapse white dwarf, calculate the masses, the total angular momentum, and the specific angular momentum distribution of the white dwarfs. And then we build the models of neutron stars with the same mass, angular momentum, and the angular momentum distribution. So this is just a mapping, and we avoid to do the core collapse simulation because that's computationally expensive. And we consider two types of pre-collapse white dwarfs. The first type is the Austin neo-magnesium white dwarfs, and the collapse are triggered by the electron captures of magnesium and neon at the density of 4 × 10⁻¹. Second type is the carbon Austin white dwarfs, and the collapse occurs at a higher density. It ranges from 6 × 10⁻¹ to 10⁻¹⁰ grams per cubic centimeter. And these white dwarfs are more compact. So, these are some of the models I've computed. And this, the first column here is the properties of the pre-collapse white dwarf. And these two columns are the properties of the neutron star as a result of the collapse of these white dwarfs. So the first six models here are the Austin neo-magnesium white dwarfs. This omega here is the rotational angular frequency, and omega k is the Capellan frequency on the equatorial surface of the white dwarf. So these six models correspond to different amount of rotation from the slow rotating rotation case to rapid rotation. And after the collapse, the neutron star has a central density of a few times 10⁻¹⁴, and it has T over W of this value, where T is the rotational kinetic energy and W is the gravitational potential energy. So you can see that these four models, they have these two quantities doesn't change much. This is pretty insensitive when you have when the white dwarf is rotating faster than 60% of the Capellan frequency. And the remaining two models here are the carbon Austin white dwarfs, and they are at maximum rotation, which means this omega over omega k here are both equal to 1, and they differ by the initial density. Okay, here is the density contour of the of one of the neutron star models. This is the slowest rotating case I've computed, after the collapse, it has a T over W is equal to 0.0984. Showing here is the rotation axis, and this one is the cylindrical radial coordinate. And you can see that this system contains two regions. It's a core region where the density contour look more or less like elliptical, and then there is a low density outer layers. And the second graph here shows the mass fraction, the cylindrical mass fraction as a function of radius. From this graph, we can see that most of the mass are concentrated within the 20 kilometers of, from the rotation axis. In fact, these outer layers contribute only about 1% of the system's total mass. So you can regard this system as a neutral star surrounded by an accretion torus. And this one is the angular velocity distribution as a function of radius. So you can see it's fairly defensive rotating. Okay, this is the density contour of another model. And this is the fast rotating case. It has T over W equals 0.255. And so here are the, again, the density contours. And this lower graph here is the magnification of this the first 100 kilometers. Again, it contains two regions, the core region and the low density outer layers. And then you look at the mass fraction, again, you can see that these outer layers contribute only a small amount of the total mass. Okay, so having computed this model, the next I want to study the instabilities of those collapsed objects. First, in fact, I have only time to talk about this dynamical bar instability here. And the way to study it is the following. We perturb the equilibrium configuration by adding a perturbation of this form. This is the density pressure, the same for pressure, velocity, and the gravitational potential. And it carries a factor e to the power m phi here. If we are interested in bar instability, then we set this m equal to 2. And then we plug these quantities into these hydrodynamical equations, namely the continuity equation, the Euler equation, and the Poisson equation. And then we keep terms only linear in this perturbation quantity. And then we try to evolve this linearized equation with time and see if those perturbations go with time. The reason why we study this linear, we want to linearize the equation is because for linearized equation, this different m doesn't couple. So effectively, we have only two dimensions. So we can do a 2 plus 1 simulation instead of 3 plus 1. And it saves a lot of computer time. And here is one of the results I've got, one of the simulation results. This corresponds to the fastest rotating model. It has T over W equals 0.261. So in here is log alpha versus T in versus time in milliseconds. Alpha is defined by this quantity. It's basically a measure of the relative amplitude of the density perturbations. So we can see that at late time, this amplitude goes approximately exponential with time. And it has an e-folding time of 3 milliseconds. And for comparison, the rotation period of the central neutron star is about 1.5 milliseconds. So we can see that this model is dynamically unstable. And then we have the result of the simulation for a bunch of other models. Showing here is the e-folding time as a function of T over W of the final neutron star model. And as expected, if you decrease this T over W, then the e-folding time increases. So far, I've only got these 4 points. And I haven't done models with T over W lower than this 0.23. But I believe that this model is very close to the marginally unstable configuration, which means for T over W smaller than 0.23, the system will probably be dynamically stable. If that's the case, we can go back to the original Weierdorf and ask what kind of Weierdorf will be unstable. So we look at this model, and we look at the T over W and see, we can see that if we are considering the austenium and lithium Weierdorf, then we don't have to have a fast rotating case in order to have T over W greater than 0.23. For example, this one is already achieved the purpose. But if we are looking at the carbon austen Weierdorf at 10 to power 10, then only the fastest rotating case can be dynamically unstable after the collapse. So that's the difference I want to talk about.
So you've ignored angular momentum transport mechanisms that have to occur going from the white dwarf stage and collapsing down into the
universe. That's right.
So do you have some estimate of the timescale on which those might act compared to the timescale for the collapse?
I think the timescale is much longer because the collapse only lasts of a fraction of a second. So and the transport timescale, I'm not sure about the timescale, but I think it's much longer. And I also talked to Chris Fire and he told me that he also considered this core collapse simulation and also considered the angular momentum transport and according to him it's not important. That means the time scale is much longer. That's right.
And that to achieve that requires, I presume, some amount of meridional circulation in this case to get into that state. And so it's not completely obvious to me that it will really get into that state. I mean, this is probably the best one can do without
doing. Yeah, that's true. I haven't considered the magnetic field in this case, but my guess will be if they are dynamically unstable, then I think this instability will dominate. I mean, the magnetic one will be weaker in comparison. Yes, but I have to estimate the strength of the magnetic field and see the time scale, but so you think it also occurs at millisecond time scale for this magnetic field effect to come into play? I'm not sure about that, but maybe you're right.
Yeah,